Session number 10111, Squadron Leader Miloslav Mansfeld, Part 1.
Whereabouts were you born in Czechoslovakia?
Oh, I was born in northeast Bohemia, near the town of Mladá Boleslav, on the 14th of December 1912.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was killed in the First World War. So my mother was a widow, and she started a business in Německý Brod selling green grocery. Fortunately, she was very healthy, so everything was all right. And she came very soon. She became quite, she had a nice business because she worked very hard. She got up at 3 o'clock in the morning, went by train into the village, bought eggs and all that stuff there, and brought it in the town and sold it. And that she did every day. Before I woke up in the morning, she was back at home. I didn't even know she was gone before.
How did you come to join the Czechoslovak Air Force?
Well, afterwards, when I went to school, my mother remarried again, and they moved into the different town. And instead of going the same business, I was seeing the aeroplanes going around, and one of them landed near our new town I was in. And then I decided, this is the thing I'm going to do. I will fly. So before I was 18, I applied for the admission to be taken into the military school for the LFs, which is before you actually come under the oaths. So there I stayed 2 years in a uniform, of course, and after that I went to regiment. Number 6 Regiment as an NCO, junior, very junior NCO. And there I stayed until 1939, really.
What was the equipment of the Czechoslovak Air Force like? Was it good equipment at that time?
Yes, we had still from the First World War, but they were just more or less for training and for the museums. But then in 1930 and 31, they started to build the new aeroplanes. And we had quite a good training aeroplanes and the field aeroplanes, fighter aeroplanes. Of course, the bombers were too expensive to build, so we had some Fokkers, and later on some from France, because we had a very good relationship with France, or at least they said we had a good relationships with them. So they sold us everything they could, and some of them were the Blochs 200, which we called flying coffins. But that was then.
Why did you call them flying coffins?
Because it was so heavy, it couldn't fly on one engine. And if you throttle down both engines, it just went down like a stone. But still it did fly, and but it didn't have a very great...
safety record?
No, the range.
I think that in 1937 you visited Russia. How did that come about?
Yes, at that time, naturally, as I said, the life went rather fast in our country. So we were transferred quite a few aeroplanes to Slovakia and on the borders, sort of policing the borders. And then I also went to... where we had a gold in Slovakia, brought half of the national
Gold reserves?
Gold reserves, yes, national debt, to Prague, flew it in Prague. And then we went to Russia to get some new aeroplanes, light bombers. We couldn't go via Poland because Poland didn't want to let us in because of the Germany. So we had to go via Romania as a civilians, as the engineers, went to Kiev. The first time we went there in October 1937, waiting for the aeroplanes, but they were not ready, so we went back again to Czechoslovakia and start next year in 1938 in January or February, and went there about five or six times, I think. I'm not quite sure it's five or six. And every time we went there by train and flew back aeroplanes which were Antonov AN-25, and they were renamed B-81 in Czechoslovakia. They were very similar to the British aeroplanes, one pilot, one navigator, and one crewman in a bag, and that was the end. They couldn't even get together, actually. They had to be separate.
What did you think to the Russian aircraft?
Oh, when it came to our fabric, when it came to our factories, they looked at it and said, it's all right, it's very good, but the finishing is such that it could, if it was finished in Czechoslovak factories, it would have at least 10 to 15 kilometers speed, greater speed then.
And what kind of reception did you get in Russia from the Russians?
Oh, very nice indeed. But it was, from now, you are a guest until now. And we were not actually free to go outside alone, because we knew that at the moment we had always one secret serviceman behind us. And when we started to split up in a Kiev, each going separately, when we knew the town, we had to have everyone, every of us had a different secret serviceman there. And as it happened, the girls there, they are sort of free. They are more free than they are in Czechoslovakia or in England, and they approach you than us. And one of them approached, well, more or less came, so I said, why not speak Russian, more or less, just to walk with her and speak Russian with her. And one day, we were walking, just talking, and suddenly two chaps from behind pushed her forward. And I was a little bit surprised, but being a sort of blockheaded chap, I jumped on him and said, hey, what you are doing? And she, the girl, said, oh, let him be, that's all right. I will just tell them what I want, and they let me go. So they took her just inside the door there, and I was waiting outside. And in a while, she came out, and she told me, it's all right. My father is a chief of police in Kiev here, chief of the secret police here. And he has got a taxi, he's playing as a taxi man, and he does all sorts of things. So when I told them what happened, they let me go. So as from that moment I could go with her, and I didn't do anything. I was afraid to do anything with her, so I just walked all the time, from the beginning, just the streets and talk to her, and that was the lot. But the first time, when we didn't fly home in 1937, when the first time we went, there was on a train, there was a one chappy Swiss old boy and a lady with him. She was Russian. And in a moment, when she wasn't sort of looking for all the time at him, he told us he is a film director and producer, and who was making the films in Russia. And when he finished, they wouldn't let him stay here. They said, thank you very much, and off you go. And during all the time, this girl who was with him was his girlfriend day and night, and she had to take him right to the front, to the Romanian front, and from there she went back again. Now, second time when we went to Kiev, I met this girl, and she looked at me, she recognized me immediately. She looked at me, she said, where is he? And I thought, my friend, the other one. So I said, oh, in a hotel. So she said, all right, let's go with me. And she meant the chappy who was her boyfriend, the film producer. So I went with her, so I said, there he is. She said, oh, no, that's not him. And off she went. She was looking for somebody completely else. Anyway, we had our secret servicemen behind us, so she couldn't stay there any longer than just to verify that it wasn't the chappy who was supposed to be there.
But if she was the daughter of the
chief of secret... That was the other one. That was my girl.
But that girl, do you think that she'd been told by her father to make friends with
him? No, I don't think so. I think, well, she might have been. She might have been. But the way she was talking to me, she didn't want to know anything about me because I said I'm an engineer. I didn't say I am an airman because we were all engineers, came there just to see some machinery. But all she wanted was stockings, and handkerchiefs and all the stuff like that, perfumes and the watches. And every time I came here in Kiev, first she went into my pocket to have a look whether there are the stockings, which I naturally brought every time for her, because I was pleased to have a talk with somebody Russian there. Oh, because the Czech is not so different to Russian, but still, if you don't speak it, you don't understand it so well.
What impression did you get of their standard of living when you visited Russia?
Well, it wasn't very high, I should say, but I give you the example. They've got a supermarket there, let's say, call it supermarket, which is GAM-KUM. G-U-M, I think it's called. And there you come, you choose, there are these, the goods are the same as here, let's say, in a shop, just displayed. You choose it, you ask how much it costs, then you go to the cuss, there you pay for it, you get a ticket, and then you go and she will measure the amount you have paid for. Now, as you go in there, you go in a queue. And it happened once I have seen it that there was an old lady before me and there was a girl before her and there was a general in a uniform behind me there. So as we were coming into the shop, She got some sort of salami or whatever it was. The young girl chatting with this sales girl there. And when it was wrapped up, the old lady said, hey, put it back on a scale. And so she just looked at the old lady. She didn't say anything at all. Put it back on a scale. Cut a little bit off because it was a little bit over the weight. Just a little bit slice off. And they gave it to the girl and off she went. It was sort of thing like that which surprised you in that one.
Anyway, so the old lady thought that she had too much?
She gave him too much, yeah. She gave her too much. But nothing happened to me because I was after the old lady and behind me was the general or whatever it was, so we were all right. But anyway, my secret policeman the chappy who was me, he wasn't very far from there, so I wouldn't be in trouble at all there.
Can you tell me about the feelings of you and your friends at the time of Munich towards Britain and France? Was there great resentment towards Britain
yes,
and France?
Yes, we were shocked. We were shocked, I should say. We were shocked that Britain has signed this agreement with Hitler, but it wasn't a shock, it was a resentment more, and that France said to us, because France before was our senior partner for Czechoslovakia. If anything happens, we shall go and help you. That's what they said. And we had a General Fauché, General Faucher, not Fauché, General Faucher, who was in charge of the military since after the First World War, he was in charge of the military mission in Czechoslovakia. So everything what has been done in the Czech Air Force or Czech Army was done in accordance with the French the
agreement,
yes. So when this happened and the French said, you have to give in, you mustn't fight, we were more than annoyed with them. We were a little bit surprised with England, but we were really annoyed with France over that. But then, as I said, we had this... when the Germans came in...
Can you describe what you saw of the German entry into Czechoslovakia? Did you see the troops coming in?
Oh yes, before the war, well, before the occupation, I put it this way to start with, our transport, our traffic was on the left side, the same as in England here, but of course in Germany it's on the right side, it was the right side. So when they came in Czechoslovakia, they more or less walked in, except a few small, not a garrison, but something like a Maginot Line. We had also there on the borders where young officers wouldn't give in. They wouldn't just stay there and wouldn't let in anybody in. So otherwise, they gingerly, the Germans came in, have a look what's going on, whether they will be attacked or not. And when eventually they came in, so they were strict with us, not sort of in a civil way, they wouldn't beat us or anything, but they were very strict and they tried to be not unfriendly. Of course they knew who was a friend and who wasn't friend then by that time, because they had a lot of spies and a lot of the people who collaborated with the Germans.
You were telling me earlier that you discovered that the Germans were not used to some of the foods that you were having in Czechoslovakia.
Well, when I left the Czech Air Force, when I was sent on extended leave, I went to my parents' restaurant. It was a restaurant near Prague. It was the village was a commuter to Prague, commuter people there. And we had quite a few Germans in the village there. And they stopped in our restaurant, and the youngsters, the young boys of 20, perhaps 21, very soon, well, were surprised how what the food we had, which they never had
in Germany.
Germany. And that was, for example, they would get scrambled eggs, and a bar of chocolate, and they would eat it together at the same time. I was so surprised that eventually I asked them whether they like it. They said, and the young boy said, I have never seen scrambled egg because we have got ersatz. I never seen a chocolate because we have got ersatz. And this tastes completely different way than in our home.
They'd eat the chocolates and the scrambled egg on the same plate?
On the same plate, yeah. Well, chocolate, I couldn't put it on the same plate. I put it next to it because naturally I wouldn't do it that way. I didn't want to make a sort of joke of it. But he asked for it, so he ate it. And he ate it, chocolate and the scrambled eggs. Now, at the same time, when they were inside, they had their car, which was a panzer car, small one for two or three people there, outside stationed, parked in front of the in our public house. So I just went around it, and what I found, I didn't really touch it, but I could see it, that it wasn't actually the panzer car. It was a no ordinary open car with the four planks of wood in the corners, which were wrapped around by the sort of what would you call the sack made the
sacking
ground and sprayed with camouflage. So it looked like a camouflaged panzer car, but all it was just an ordinary open car with this sucking ground, and that was it.
Where did you see that?
In front of our house, in front of the public house. My parents' house, public house.
How many of these so-called panzers did you see?
Two.
Two
of them,
made
yes.
In this way?
One came in and one was going on the other side. They were sort of more or less going around showing the, what would you call the strengths. Just show that they are there. And going through the village, next village, and coming back, etc.
You said the German soldiers attempted to behave correctly.
Yes.
But
yes.
Did you ever see any German misbehavior at that stage?
No, not me. No, not in our place anyway, because they wanted to get some food. So they were very good. They had their Feldwebel, which was a sort of warrant officer who came and visited us and had a look around. What's going, what they are getting, and he was satisfied with the service which was getting, but they found that I was an Air Force man, Czech Air Force man, and then therefore I no longer came to this serve anybody actually then. Then I just left and came home in the evenings if I have to, and otherwise spent my time in London, in Prague, trying to get the permission to get out from my commanding officer.
How did the Czechoslovak people behave towards the Germans? Did they ignore them or show hostility or what?
Well, they were more afraid than anything else. So they were quiet. But when they were alone, they just were grumbling. But of course they wouldn't know what to do. And on the radio, they said, everybody said, be calm, behave properly, etc. So nobody was trying to make a sabotage, open sabotage at the time, because there was no reason at the time to do it, except that it was occupied. And we didn't know how long they stayed there or whether they stayed there for all the time.
Did any of the Czechoslovaks greet the Germans?
I I didn't know him. I don't know him anything, but so I did hear about it, but I didn't know myself about it at all. All the people I met, all the people I spoke to, were against the Germans. There was no sort of, at least in our place, there was not a single man who would go and say, let's go and speak to this, we are friends, they are our allies. Nothing of that kind was there, just occupying, and that nobody said anything else about this.
Were there any people in your hometown who were German-speaking Czechoslovaks?
Yes, many people spoke German.
As their first language?
No, not in my hometown, not as a first language. There were, in a Sudetenland, there were many people. Then there were cluster in, I think it was Jindřichův Hradec, south, but even then they didn't, many of them didn't want to speak German after the occupation because they were Czechs. Czechoslovaks speak German, but when the Germans came in, they didn't want to speak German because they didn't like it. But of course, not many, not all of them. Some of them were immediately with a German and said that we are the Germans, in a certain land, especially.
You are not of German origin yourself?
No, I've got a German name, but I'm not. I've tried to see through the churches origin of my name, but I couldn't find anything.
The church registers.
Yes, anything. All my before my grandfather, great-grandfather, they were all born in Czechoslovakia, and they were Czech workers. They didn't come from Germany.
You were telling me earlier that you were the personal pilot of one of the VIPs in the Czechoslovak Air Force. Can you tell me that again, now we've got the tape recorder on?
I was in the Prague in a special unit there for, to do everything. To check the pilots who were no longer flying for a longer time. They were sort of somewhere in an office working, so they came to fly now and then, and also to fly somebody to Moravia, Slovakia, etc. And came the time when we had to change the take from Kremnice, which is a place in Slovakia where they print the money, and they had the gold there and everything. They had to divide the gold. So I was the chappy who went over there to collect the gold and brought it back to Brno in Moravia, and there it was, I flew it into Brno, and then it was taken from Brno by the transport to Prague. That was one of the things which I have done.
But the other thing you were telling me about was there was some plan to replace President Beneš, you said.